This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 797 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. The Israeli army continues to kill and injure Palestinians across the Gaza Strip in spite of the so-called ceasefire enacted on October 10th. Meanwhile, a brutal winter storm is destroying tent shelters and partially destroyed buildings as the Israelis continue to prevent the entry of prefabricated mobile homes and supplies to repair basic infrastructure. One infant has already died from exposure. Israel killed a child, 16-year-old Zahar Nasser Shamia, on Wednesday, shooting him and then crushing his body underneath a tank in central Gaza, according to the Wafa News Agency. A man and a woman were shot and killed by Israeli fire, and a child was shot in the head and injured in the Halawa displacement camp in Jabalia on Wednesday in northern Gaza. Israeli forces shot 10-year-old Bayan in the head, reportedly from a gun mounted on a crane, while she was sheltering with her family in the camp. Journalist Bashir Abu Asher captured a clip of Bayan, in shock and with bandages around her head, being cradled by her grandfather inside an ambulance. The soldiers, the grandfather says, quote, shoot over our heads and we have no place to take shelter. At least 7 Palestinians were killed in separate attacks in northern Gaza on Sunday, December 7th, including a 70-year-old woman and her son, who were reportedly hunted by an Israeli quadcopter drone. The Israeli army claimed that those targeted had crossed the so-called yellow line. Al Jazeera's Hani Mahmoud reported that the woman and her son were chased by a quadcopter drone about half a mile from the yellow line, and, quote, left there to bleed to death as the aircraft continued hovering overhead, preventing anyone from reaching them. Mahmoud described the incident as, quote, just one of many violations throughout the day and throughout the past 50 days since the truce came into effect. He added that in areas close to the yellow line, many Palestinians may unwittingly cross the boundary because it is not visible. There are no clear markings or signage to show that this is the ceasefire demarcation that is a restricted and dangerous area, he said. Also on December 7th, a 3-year-old child, Ahed Tariq Al-Bayouk, was shot and killed by Israeli forces while she was playing outside of her tent in the Al-Mawasi tent encampment south of Khan Yunus. Reporter Ibrahim Kanan filmed Ahed's grief-stricken family members carrying her little body in a shroud to a nearby clinic. Israel attacked a home in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza on Monday, bombing it with 2 missiles, according to local reports. The United Nations Humanitarian Office reported on Monday that airstrikes, shelling, and gunfire continued across all governorates, including in Jabalia al-Balad, and east of Jabalia in North Gaza, in Ashujaiya and Atufah, east and northeast of Gaza City, off the coast of Khan Yunus, and in the east and south of the governorate, as well as east and north of Rafah City. Several locations east of the yellow line were affected, the UN said. Reporter Mahmoud Abu Salama recorded footage of Israeli forces firing artillery shells from inside the heart of Jabalia refugee camp on Wednesday, where entire blocks are being leveled during ongoing military operations, according to the local media collective Translating Palestine. Residents report intensified shelling alongside the movement of troops and armored vehicles, signaling a new wave of destruction in an area within the yellow line that is already devastated by months of Israeli occupation, bombardment, and forced displacement, they say. The Gaza government media office stated on Tuesday that in the 60 days since the ceasefire took effect, Israel has committed at least 738 violations, including more than 200 direct shooting incidents, 37 incursions by military vehicles into residential areas, 358 bombings and attacks targeting civilians and their homes, and nearly 140 demolitions of homes, institutions, and civil buildings. On Thursday, Gaza's health ministry reported that more than 380 Palestinians have been killed and 1,000 people have been injured since the so-called ceasefire took effect. Israeli military officials claimed on Tuesday that they are working on using the so-called Yellow Line, which keeps moving westwards, to designate a permanent new boundary for Gaza. While visiting Israeli occupation soldiers in northern Gaza, in the ruins of Beit Hanun and Jabalia, Israeli Lieutenant General Eyal Zamir said that the Yellow Line that was demarcated by the Trump administration, quote, is a new border line, serving as a forward defensive line for our communities and a line of operational activity. Zamir added that Israel would hold on to its current military positions. Quote, we have operational control over extensive parts of the Gaza Strip and we will remain on those defensive lines, he said. Earlier this month, Euromed Human Rights Monitor admonished Trump's plan to entrench Israel's ongoing control and rampant encroachment of occupied Gaza. Quote, the consequences of the U.S. plan to support dividing the Gaza Strip into green and red zones separated by a yellow military line carry grave risks, including the effective displacement of Palestinians from their homes and the transformation of large parts of Gaza into closed military zones under the direct control of the Israeli army, Euromed stated. The yellow line, marked by concrete blocks, has not remained fixed but has been pushed beyond the published maps, advancing in some areas by more than 1 kilometer inside the Gaza Strip. It is used to unilaterally redraw lines of military control, gradually expanding areas under direct Israeli authority, placing additional territory under closed military rule, and severely restricting freedom of movement. This practice entrenches de facto annexation and fragments Gaza's territorial unity in clear violation of international law, the group stated. According to information obtained by Euromed, this plan is based on transferring the Palestinian population from the red zone to the green zone through various pressure tactics, which are war crimes. The plan includes the establishment of cities of prefabricated container homes or caravans in the green zone, each housing around 25,000 people within an area of no more than 1 square kilometer and enclosed by walls and checkpoints, Euromed notes. Quote, entry and exit would be permitted only through security screening, effectively converting these sites into overcrowded detention camps that impose severe restrictions on residents' freedom of movement and daily life. The design of these proposed cities mirrors the historical model of ghettos, in which colonial and racist regimes confined specific groups to sealed areas surrounded by walls and guard posts, with movement and resources controlled externally, as seen in Europe during World War II and in other colonial contexts. This system of forced spatial segregation does not constitute temporary shelter, but rather creates imposed population enclaves in which entire communities are subjected to management and control instead of being treated as individuals entitled to freedom of movement, residence, and life in their original communities, the group added. Euromed warned that engineering units responsible for the plan have already begun preparing designs for the first experimental city in Rafah, pending the securing of funding to begin implementation on the ground. Quote, life within these temporary cities would be subject to arbitrary security control and externally imposed governance arrangements, leaving residents with no genuine choice to accept or reject them and denying them any role in managing their public affairs. This entrenches a new political and administrative reality that places the future of the Gaza Strip, the identity of its residents, and their right to self-determination on their land under direct threat due to external interference. UN spokesperson Stéphane Dujarric, expressing an international legal official's version of thoughts and prayers, responded to Zamir's vision of a new boundary line inside Gaza, saying, quote, we firmly stand against any change of the borders of Gaza and Israel, and that Zamir's statement, quote, seems to me to go against the spirit and the letter of the Trump peace plan. A brutal winter storm has hit Gaza, plunging hundreds of thousands of families into further crisis 26 months into Israel's genocide. And the blockade of essential humanitarian aid, food, fuel, medicine, medical supplies, and infrastructure and construction materials remains firmly in place amid a lack of any meaningful international political pressure. One 8-month-old baby, Rahaf Abu Jazar, died of exposure to cold after water gathered in her family's tent in Khan Yunis amid the heavy rainfall, Al Jazeera reported. Ismail Al-Tawabta of the Gaza Government Media Office said that nearly 300,000 families are without shelter as the storm bears down. Roughly 250,000 tents and mobile homes were supposed to enter Gaza, Al-Tawabta said. But there are currently 6,000 trucks loaded with aid stuck at the crossings, he told Al Jazeera on Wednesday. Quote, we are issuing an urgent appeal to the world, U.S. President Trump and the United Nations Security Council to pressure the Israeli occupation, he added. Gaza's civil defense rescue workers say that its teams are receiving distress calls from Palestinians inside displacement camps, reporting flooding tents and families trapped inside by heavy rains. Quote, despite limited resources and a lack of necessary equipment, our teams are working tirelessly to reach those in need and provide assistance within the available means, the civil defense stated. On Thursday, civil defense reported that three buildings have already collapsed in Gaza City due to the flooding and strong winds. The Gaza Government Media Office stated on Tuesday that with the storm bringing flooding and strong winds, Palestinians in Gaza are experiencing, quote, a recurring tragic scenario where thousands of families will face the risk of drowning, collapses, and flooding. The coming hours will document heartbreaking scenes of families struggling to survive inside tents that cannot withstand the rain or wind, amidst a shameful international silence and the absence of any serious intervention to provide even the most basic protection and relief for the displaced. Quote, we hold the Israeli occupation fully responsible for exposing displaced persons to the dangers of the climate, given its closure of crossings and its prevention of the entry of relief and shelter materials, including 300,000 tents and mobile homes, in addition to the absence of alternative shelters. This perpetuates the denial of hundreds of thousands of their right to safe housing under international humanitarian law, the media office added. Turning to the occupied West Bank, a 17-year-old child was killed by Israeli forces on December 6th in Al-Khalil, or Hebron, in the south. Defense for Children International Palestine, or DCIP, reported that Ahmed Khalil Rajabi, quote, was driving his family's car to visit a friend at Alia Governmental Hospital in the city center, during which Israeli forces alleged that Ahmed attempted to run over a soldier. Israeli forces opened fire on the vehicle, killing Ahmed. The soldiers then confiscated his body. DCIP said that, according to their investigation, as he left the hospital to visit his friend, Ahmed approached a checkpoint and saw soldiers stationed across from it. The soldiers yelled at Ahmed to stop when he was beside them in the second lane. The vehicle moved past the soldiers for several meters before Ahmed halted and backed up no more than 5 meters, when the soldiers immediately began shooting at the car, causing the car to slide. One of the soldiers attempted to open the driver's door, and as the car skidded, the front driver's side hit him. He then joined the other 5 soldiers in shooting at the vehicle. The car kept slowly reversing, swerving slightly downhill. At that point, an older man, a sanitation worker in the Hebron municipality, was hit by the barrage of bullets fired toward the car. The vehicle eventually stopped in the middle of the road, where the soldiers continued to fire at the car, killing Ahmed. An ambulance arrived, but soldiers fired toward it, preventing it from reaching either Ahmed in the car or the injured sanitation worker. A large number of Israeli army and police units arrived later. At first, the Israeli military stated that a speeding vehicle had opened fire on soldiers. They later withdrew that claim and issued a new one, claiming instead that the soldiers had shot at a car that attempted to run them over, DCIP stated. Ayed Abu Aktesh, the accountability program director at DCIP, said, quote, "There is no rule of law for Palestinian children. Palestinian families are left to piece together how their child was killed, and in many cases are denied even the basic dignity of burying them, as Israel continues to withhold children's bodies in violation of international law." Israeli forces and settlers have killed 53 Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank in 2025, according to documentation collected by Defense for Children International Palestine. Israeli forces have withheld the bodies of at least 61 Palestinian children since June 2016, DCIP says. Six of the children's bodies have since been released to their families, while 55 Palestinian children's bodies remain withheld by Israeli authorities. In the village of Kariut near Nablus in the northern West Bank, Israeli soldiers used heavy machinery to uproot olive trees this week during the harvest season. Journalist Issam Ramawi captured footage of the bulldozers destroying the olive groves belonging to village elders in Kariut on December 8th. The Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz reported that the military destroyed hundreds of trees in an area that the army claims exceeds the boundaries set by a military order, citing security measures and signed by the army's West Bank commander. Village council members said that the soldiers are also destroying wells, not only the trees. The roots of the trees were severed, the village council members said, and the owners could not reach them and attempt to rescue them. The council said that the military threatened residents that they would also destroy their houses if anyone tried to approach the trees. Meanwhile, in occupied Jerusalem, Israeli police and municipal officers raided the headquarters of the United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, on December 8th, cutting communications, seizing items, and replacing the UN flag with Israel's flag. This is the latest escalation of attacks against the agency, which was established in the wake of Israel's seizure and theft of Palestine by Zionist militias and the expulsion of approximately 800,000 Palestinians in 1948. UNRWA has not used the building since the beginning of the year after Israeli authorities ordered the agency to vacate all of its premises and halt operations, Al Jazeera reported. The agency's chief, Philippe Lazzarini, said that this latest attack on the agency follows, quote, months of harassment that included arson attacks in 2024, hateful demonstrations and intimidation, supported by a large-scale disinformation campaign, as well as anti-UNRWA legislation passed by the Israeli parliament in breach of its international obligations. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Paying a High Price in Gaza by Khaled Al-Kirshali, writing from Gaza. I wake up at 7 a.m. and immediately head outside to the street to check our water supplies, Khaled writes. In front of the warehouse where my family lives are our three buckets. Only half of one of them is filled with water, and I know I will need to replenish our supply. I wash my face and start to walk over to the school next door to see if a water shipment has come. Along the way, I see my neighbor Fayaz Shabbat, and he tells me that the water shipment did not come. During the week, only one water shipment came. I return to the warehouse where my father, mother, brother, and I have been displaced since February in Deir Abalah in southern Gaza. My mother is awake, kneading dough. I ask her what she wants from the market, and she asked me in turn what I want to eat. We ate canned meat yesterday, I say, so it is better to eat something cheaper today. It has been a while since we last ate rice, so she asked me to try and find 1 kilo of rice. My grandmother is listening to us, so I ask her if she wants anything from the market for my grandfather. She asked me to bring tomatoes, if there are any, and to only bring 4 or 5, as 1 kilogram costs around $50. I put on my sewn slippers and head to the market. My grandfather Ahmad, who is 82, sits in his wheelchair in a shaded area of the street. I say good morning to him and continue walking. After 5 minutes of walking, I pass by a neighborhood that has been completely destroyed. I pass by the ruins of a building where a massacre was committed by the Israeli occupation against the Al-Hawajri family. On a wall near the massacre site is a message written in red. Jude is under the rubble, 31 October 2023. God is sufficient for me, and he is the best disposer of affairs. Jude has since been pulled out from the rubble, though, as another message on the wall tells us this much. 20 meters from the massacre, I enter the spice shop, and I ask the seller for the spices and the rice. The shop is crowded. The shopkeeper creates and mixes his own spice mixtures, and they are popular. When he gives me what I ordered, I ask him to give me his phone number to transfer the money to his Bank of Palestine account. I pay $4. I go to a grocery store on the other side of the street. Adel Oda, the owner of the shop, accepted online payments during the famine. I greet Adel and look for onion, garlic, tomatoes, and green pepper, but I do not find any. When I ask Adel about it, he says that no vegetables have entered the strip yet. I exit the store and walk for 20 minutes until I reach Al-Bahasi Market. I go there because, at one time, I could find everything I needed in that market, but this time I cannot find all that I need. The place is crowded with people, most of them paying with their bank accounts as well. I pay $11 for a kilo of rice and $1 for ice cream. I exit the market and walk rapidly for half an hour in search of the vegetables. By 8:30 a.m., I have reached Al-Birka Crossroads, where I know a vegetable seller who will accept a bank payment. The man tells me that tomatoes are non-existent in the market and that the prices of onions and garlic have skyrocketed again. He also does not have green pepper. I have around $37 cash in my wallet. I go to a grocery store on the other side of the street and buy less than 200 grams of green pepper for $5, garlic for $5, and one small onion for $10. Then I return to the warehouse and give my mother what I've bought. Those are excerpts from Paying a High Price in Gaza by Khaled Al-Kershali, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. In the Shati, or beach refugee camp west of Gaza City, on December 7th, Palestinians celebrated the Palestine football team's qualification to the quarterfinals of the 2025 Arab Cup. Journalist Aboud Abu Salama took photographs of people watching the match in a crowded room huddled around a television. He writes, quote, "Gathered closely around a small screen, Gaza residents watched the Arab Cup football match between the Palestinian national team and its Syrian counterpart. Despite the harsh living conditions in the Al-Shati refugee camp, this shared moment of sports brings a brief sense of unity and escape amid ongoing hardship." That's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.